freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go with a Brock and Salk podcast. The first one in forever, Brock. Coming off a football game. Coming off a win. Coming off a dominating Seahawks win. That's a heck of a... Here's my question for you right off the bat.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you... I want to name one name. Do you want me to... Which name should come first on this show? The name of the veteran quarterback or the name of the brand new addition at safety? Which name should we say first today on this podcast? Whose name should be the first out the mouth?
It's still got to be Russell. He's done it for 9 years and somehow still marvels and is getting better and better. So Jamal was redunculous, and we will talk about that, but it's still, I mean, we were the House of Wilsonism. And since this is our first game, remember our very first show when the boys are back again? Remember?
I do, yeah. That was good. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
You and DeAndre Swift, you'll never forget that.
Hopefully our debut went better than yes. His, poor guy.
Yes, I'm not. He's the leader. He's the captain. It's still his team. He somehow was better and better than he was even a year ago. As I told you, Russell can't be stagnant. He's got to keep improving. So I'm going to land on three. If you want to go double threes, you can go double threes.
Well, no, let's do that. Let's start there with Russell Wilson. We can start with the amazing performance, the essentially perfect performance that Russell had.
He was Neo from The Matrix.
Now, I actually have some behind the scenes information on this. So I haven't wanted to bring this to light until now.
And Mark Rogers texted you.
Now, I've heard a little bit behind the scenes. So in the preparation for this game against Atlanta, I'm told, sources indicate, that Russell got a series of emails leading up to the game.
You've got mail.
From a former teammate holding him accountable for all of the mistakes he had made in the preseason / training camp / working out.
Kind of an airing of grievances.
Well, so,
let's start it over. Let me start with Jamal.
That he's got there where they play in the like Churchill Downs.
We've made a big mistake.
Yeah, he got an email that listed all of the mistakes he'd made and just wanted to make sure he was being held accountable.
Did
for
not
all
lead
of them.
Into darkness.
Right. And so I'm told, Brock, now again, this is just sources, so they're anonymous. That's why I played so well. What do you think?
Lit a fire.
Yeah. Hey, Howdy, can we hit the start again? So when Mike asked me the question of which one do you want to start with?
How about that playmaking safety? Wow. He was all over the place.
Brock, is this what Russell is now? Is he essentially perfect?
No. He'll play better teams and better secondaries, and it's going to be harder than it was. But I will say this, and a little bit of what I saw in the game, I got to broadcast on Sunday too. I think with the only quarterback in, as far as the Pro Football Focus grades, that was higher than Russell was Aaron Rodgers, who was just, I mean, he was nearly as perfect as Russell was. Veteran guys going on the road are going to feast as long as there's no fans in the stands. So I think you saw a Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. These guys play on the road and go, are you kidding me? I can communicate? Are you kidding me? This game that has already slowed down compared to so many of my peers to a level that's almost unfair to defenses is even slower and easier. Russell has a chance to be better than he was a year ago, which I didn't think was possible. And I told you guys, like he that was one of my big keys, and you mocked me. You laughed at me. You poked fun at me. Right?
That's all true.
Yes, you did. Correct. Yes, you did.
Kind of.
No, you did.
I think that's a little revision.
Let's basically
sure.
say you
I'm
shamed me.
I'm just holding you
me.
Accountable.
No, you shamed me.
I'm just holding you accountable.
You said, I will follow you in the darkness, Brock, but not that point. That is stupid.
I told you to strap something up and let's go.
So he's not going to have many 31 of 35s. That doesn't happen in the history of this league. 89%. That just doesn't. And that was with a drop and a tip ball and a throwaway. So he's basically 34 for 35. I don't think you're going to see that too many times. But man, was he in total control.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's, I guess what I'm wondering now is, okay, fine, it's not that he's going to have 89% completion rate every week, but are we going, is this the new Russell, where he is in charge of everything, he's in control of everything? You know, Pete talked about the master's degree a couple of years ago. This wasn't a master's degree. Yep. This was a full-on doctorate. I mean, he's he's gone to decades of school, and now you're seeing a guy who can essentially do everything, right?
Hold on a second. Was that the smoke making you cough, bro?
Yeah, dude, the smoke's bad.
Mike has turned on the smoke,
smoke's
dude.
Back.
Finally, I was like, Mike, you got to be reveling in this smoke, huh?
No, the smoke's bad.
Chasing everybody indoors, you're just eating it up, being like to yourself.
Not
like,
this
oh,
year.
The smoke has gone too far.
So you're saying... So you're saying you're not running around green like,
no.
or you still are, and that's why you're just coughing up fumes.
No, I haven't left my house in 3 days. This is disgusting. This is like smoke soup.
Russell Wilson, 89%. You think now we got 30 for 30? Was that 89 for 89? Was that for Doug Baldwin?
Maybe
in your eyeball, Doug Baldwin, 89 for 89.
All right, if we're starting with Russ, let's ask the question. I mean, I got sort of two big storylines coming out of this game. And the first is, was the offense notably different? Obviously, Russell was great. Obviously, they put up a ton of points on the board. Was this a notably different style of play calling from Pete Carroll, Schottenheimer, and the rest of the crew?
When you are 68% throwing on early downs, number one in the league versus being on the opposite end of that spectrum for years, I don't know how you cannot look at those numbers and say, yes, notably different. Notably, very, very different. I will also say with that, be very careful. Figures don't lie. Liars figure. Because there were a number of those early downs where Russell just picked the ball up and threw it outside. Where it was a run play, not an RPO. It was a run call. Mm-hmm. And he was like, nope, I got some cushion out there. I'm just going to ditch it out to DK. I'm going to throw it out to David Moore. I'm going to put
None
it out
in
the perimeter.
Those plays worked very well, by the way.
No, but they were still positive plays. True. They weren't a -2 holding
call. I could probably live without the one to Will Disley. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to throw to the outside and try to have somebody beat the guy in space, I don't necessarily need it to be Disley.
Yes, a little different concept. That was just more in the route. I'm talking about a designed run call.
Okay.
And he just says, nope, I'm going to look at it all, and you're going to give me soft cushion. And instead of a negative run or a one-yard run or, you know, what we have seen for a lot of years, a holding call by Jermaine Ifedi or somebody else, and now you're behind the chains. Notably different. Were they ever behind the chains? Was there ever a first and 25,
well,
a second and 18?
Only
was
the third and 26 mm-hmm. that they kind of lucked out with the bad PI call. But other than that, no. Yeah. I mean, they didn't make a ton of mistakes. I mean, and when they did get behind the sticks, it was because of, it was mostly because of penalty. It was just Damian Lewis, just in his first game ever,
correct,
struggling a little bit with Grady Jarrett.
But there weren't like, out of 10 drives, there weren't three of them that were just what we used to call NCs. No chance.
Right.
I mean, you just didn't even have a chance to establish anything because you're like, you know, you're just dead. That's just a dead drive. Other than one, you know, they avoided that. You know, the other thing that is notably different is, you know, I checked in with Sando last night, and because he's got those fun databases like the professor. Do you realize that Russell threw 17 of his 35 passes less than 5 yards? He was 16 for 17, 90 yards. And you know, on little throws and dinks and dunks, and these weren't
screens,
just chunk plays.
Yeah.
Screens, bubble screens, flat routes, little smoke routes. As I said, you a run play where I'm just going to pick it up and toss it out there because I got space and cushion.
He was 16 of 17 on those?
Yes.
How was he on the hole shots?
He was still pretty good.
Okay.
He was still just fine on throws beyond 5 yards when you're 89% overall. But yeah, when you say notably different, so let's just get to the obvious, because it was the national headline last night. Scott Van Pelt, even after the Denver game, was like, yep, let Russ cook. I mean, that led SportsCenter. Mike Florio on national TV Sunday night talking about, you know,
how
better
Russ
let Russ cook.
Demanded to cook.
Hmm. Yes.
Or
he's
going to
take his cake on the road. He's
going to
put cake on. He's going to put cake on his head.
Did you ever think that Mark Rogers
he's gonna march
would
around.
Come specifically out of? Excuse me.
Mark Rogers.
It was just a source. Sorry about that. Just a source.
How different was it from our buddy Brady Henderson? The Seahawks on Sunday dropped back in the first quarter, 78% of plays, good for second most in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean,
the previous two seasons in the first quarter, they dropped back 47%. dead last in the NFL.
You can't look at it and say it wasn't different. Even me, and I didn't think it would be as different as it was. They ultimately threw it essentially twice as often as they ran it. They had 20 rushes in the game, 35 passes, but three sacks and a couple of scrambles. It was essentially 39-20. So it was essentially double. That is not the same. And doing it at the end of game, the whole thing, it was completely different.
Yes.
I think Danny got this right, Danny O'Neill. I think if you read Danny the other day, I thought Danny got this completely right. That more than cooking or not cooking or any of that, that more than anything, Pete finally is now recognizing that his offense is better than his defense, and he's got to make decisions that reflect that fact.
Okay.
That for the first time, Pete's willing to admit, this is the best part of my team.
It's funny that that's this year.
When I know, it's been true for
so
4 years.
So egregiously obvious for so many years, and this year less so.
Absolutely
true. Nonetheless.
But, okay, he did. He's recognizing it now. There's no doubt his offense is better than the defense, right? The same way there's no doubt the secondary is better than the D-line. Like, he is playing the game as if his defense is the one that needs to be coddled instead of the group he's looking to turn loose on some unsuspecting quarterback. And he played the game accordingly. That means going for it on 4th and 5. I don't know if it means running Travis Homer on 3rd and 5, but that's kind of a side note. On 4th and 5, it means not just going for it, but, you know, the little throw over the top to DK. I mean, that's what you do when your offense is better than your defense. It means keeping your foot on the accelerator longer and later into the game, because that's what you do when your offense is better than your defense. And it means maybe even working to score earlier and take a risk or two, although it's not like they took that many risks. That's the only thing that keeps me from saying they were quote-unquote letting Russ cook. Russ didn't take any risks.
Yep.
The only risk he took in the game early was the throw to Lockett that got called for PI. Mm-hmm. And that would have been essentially a punt even if it had been picked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was 3rd and 26, so there wasn't really a lot of downside to the throw he made. They would have had the ball, they would have given up the ball inside the 10 or 15. So there was no risk. There was, I mean, and part of my objection to the idea of letting Russ cook has always been about the amount of risk associated. Russ played risk-free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that everything worked.
Yep. I'm curious, if you put out a poll question to your audience and said, 39 passes to 20 runs, right? I mean, 66% pass for a team with Pete that has traditionally loved to be right at 50-50, loves to be balanced. If you're to put out a poll question and say, just very simply, was that because, to Danny's point, I think a little bit of what you're arguing, that he trusts the offense more than the defense, or that he's looked at the numbers? That he spent the offseason actually listening to the analytics community, actually listening to the people that they've brought in upstairs with some of the horsepower to simply just look at the data, to challenge some of, conventional wisdom at times, to look around the league and say, Russell, year 9 is more Drew Brees than he is, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray running around with unbelievable speed and quickness like those guys displayed on Sunday. And I'll tell you, I mean, I watched that game. And I think for the first time in 9 years of watching Russell, and he has idolized Drew Brees, that of all the quarterbacks that we hear him mention that he looked up to and certainly respects a ton, but it's always Drew. Did that not look like Drew Brees Sunday in Atlanta?
It did not look like the Drew Brees I watched against Tom Brady this weekend.
Not the 44-year-old Drew Brees.
That guy was looked like Max Hall trying to shot put the ball.
How about just the 34-year-old
Drew
Brees? Yeah,
no, it did look a lot like. I think that's a really good comp, Rock.
I mean, it was just the first time, honestly. As much as we've heard him talk about Drew Brees, he's never looked like Drew Brees. He's always extended plays. They don't get the ball out that quickly. He's got a little bit more of a prolonged.
How many plays did he even extend in the game?
He had one beautiful one that goes under the radar.
The one where most people sidearm throw.
Make Tack McKinley miss. Sidearm to David Moore for the first time.
All right, that put the game away. That ended
that
the game.
One.
It was still a game in the NFL world on the road and the Seahawks and everything else. Like, if they don't score there,
right.
Atlanta was going up and down the field, would have scored, could have made it one. That ended the game.
How many other plays did he make with his feet escape? I know he had the run, but how many times did he pull a Russell Wilson wizardry play? He didn't really need to do that.
Nope.
The pocket was largely there for him. He threw out of it, quick routes. The offensive line was better. I mean, I'm fascinated by your question about whether or not this was Pete listening to analytics. I don't think it was. That's just my guess.
Me neither.
I don't think Pete cares about that one
year 10
bit.
He's 70 years old. He's not having enough.
Are you sure
now.
Shoddy and Russell don't?
Oh, I didn't say that. I said okay. Pete. You asked about Pete.
Okay.
You didn't ask about Shoddy and Russ. Okay. You asked about Pete. All do right. I think Pete is paying attention to analytics? No. Hard no. I do not think Pete is paying attention to those analytics.
Well, hold on a second. He's concerned about some of the voting districts in the state of Wisconsin. He's going to be looking at those analytics very closely.
I think Pete wants balance. And my guess is that we will get more balance over in the future than we had in this game. That's my guess. And I don't think that will be a bad thing. By the way, Carson looked pretty darn good. And as he gets more, you know, as he get into the flow of the season and the running backs start taking a little bit more share of the carries instead of, you know, Travis Homer getting a third, like.
Just speaking about balance.
Yeah, like, I know.
Carson and Hyde, that was pretty balanced.
They both looked really good.
Yeah, they both split reps.
Yeah, so I think there will be more balance, but. I think when you factor in Russell and his doctorate, not master's, but doctorate, right, ready to handle everything on the field, you factor in having a better offense than a defense and needing to play more aggressive in order to help your defense out. And then you just, the fact that everything worked, everything they did work. I mean, I think Dan Quinn's going to get fired. I mean, that's one of my takeaways for later. Spoiler alert, like, I don't think that guy's going to make it till next year, do you?
They did not play with much juice.
No, and the defense didn't look good. For the amount of talent they have on that team, they don't play up to it.
Yeah,
they got big name guys on that, and that's how you get fired as a coach. When you've got big name players that are familiar to the fan base, and then you don't succeed,
yes,
that's when you get fired.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and he's got him. I mean, you get a bunch of Grady Jarrett, Tack McKinley, you bring in Todd Gurley, you still have Matt Ryan, like... Obviously, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley. Like, they've got guys that everybody knows because they're either good fantasy players or they're whatever. Like, you know all those players.
By the way, why is it
not good. And I think Matt Ryan's not their quarterback next year.
He's getting old, too. Why is Howdy noticeably quiet right now?
Well, I had to step out.
Oh, okay.
The Doug Baldwin thing was too much for him.
I had to step out. I couldn't handle it. I've wrapped that chapter up in my mind, and I don't want to revisit it because I actually like Doug and what he did to this team and for this team. So
yep, I got
he's still doing it. What's the problem? He's still helping. You don't think Russell can do this without someone holding him accountable, do you? He can't do this on his own. There's no way he's that good. He's still that little kid that Doug and Richard used to muss his hair because, oh, he's so cute that this little quarterback wants to come play with us. Nothing's changed. It's all still exactly the same. You know that, Howdy.
Okay, so we started with Russell. I think that's like a half hour. Can we get to 33, or do you want to just do that in takeaways, or what do you want
to
do?
Well, I guess what I would say on 33.
Jamal Adams.
First of all, he was a revelation.
Wow.
He was a straight-up revelation. Other than Bobby Wagner, who had kind of an off year last year, that's the best defensive player we've seen here in Seattle since Sherm, Earl, and Cam, and all those guys were in their prime.
Was Tedrick number 33, by the way?
He was.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I won't say
33 left.
Yeah, okay. It was not reminiscent of what we've seen from Tedrick Thompson.
You think there was an upgrade, you're saying?
Let me go bigger picture then, because we talked about this last week, right? We said last week the big friction point here for this season is – will the improvements at the 5 to 7 position groups that they made in the offseason be enough to offset the defensive line? Easy answer, week one, yes, it was. And the defensive line still had its problems. But when you start looking at the additions, and obviously starting with Adams, we'll talk more about him in a moment, but Bruce Irvin, even Mayoa, Olsen, Disley coming back, the whole right side of the offensive line, which allowed Russ to make all those clean throws you were just talking about, getting Blair in there, and I thought he was really good, DK continuing to get better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those position groups, Carlos Hyde was a contributor, Chris Carson looked great, they ran a screen pass, which we'll talk more about. Like, Brock, the rest of the roster clearly was more relevant in this game than the problems on the defensive line.
Yeah, I got a ton of takeaways. It was really fun. I talked to Schlereth yesterday after he got to study and prepare for the Seahawks for a month and got to sit with Pete and the staff behind the scenes and then ultimately got to call the game. And I got some just great stuff from Schlereth. But the bottom line is you make an acquisition like that, you mortgage the farm, which I didn't like, Yeah, I'll go on the record and say I thought it was too much. I think I was pretty clear with that on social media and on our podcast and everything else.
Schlereth disagrees. He wanted to give up two more first-rounders, he said.
Correct. Yeah, well, he said they're in negotiations to still do that. Say, hey, New York, do you want 23 and 24? We're willing to throw those in.
To be fair,
yeah.
the Jets are going to need it based on what I saw this weekend.
Yikes. But what you have to have in that player is not just immense production and talent. You do, Mike. You have to have somebody that truly elevates everyone in the room around you, both offensively, defensively, heck, special teams. And I did not know that he was that caliber. I knew he was an amazing player. I loved him out of college. He's had rave reviews other than when he exited New York with all the haters. But I had no idea that he was that. And frankly, they can say it now like, oh, we knew. Oh, yeah, we absolutely knew, and we talked to our people, and we scouted them. Mm-hmm. You really don't know when you bring somebody in until they're in your environment, and to watch him truly, and I think make Ken Norton better, and I think make Pete Carroll better, and I think make Marquise and Quandre and all the rest. Like, it was stunning to see that kind of impact on Sunday.
He is like, I mean, we've said before that when the Seahawks attempted to kind of rebuild on the fly, that the two things that they that they didn't count on were Cam Chancellor and Cliff Avril ending their careers.
Neck injuries.
Right. Yep. I mean, they bet on those two guys. They let some other folks go, and unfortunately both suffered freak injuries that ended their career.
Yes.
This was unlike anything we've seen since Cam.
And you brought in, by the way, in to kind of make up and compensate for some of those things. You tried to bring Malik McDowell, draft bust. You tried to bring Sheldon Richardson, gave up some stuff for him. Could he have some juice? Former Jet, nope, not like that. Dwayne Brown, yes. You know, he has solidified, you know, your line.
Different style, though, right? But
in a much more aged player with so many miles on the odometer.
There? I mean, I feel like you could even go
aged. I'm sorry. Yeah, I could.
Much more aged.
Yeah. Veteran. Yeah. You know, just Ferris Bueller trying to take the miles off of it, but you can't because once you've played that many games, difficult to do so. Mm-hmm. And this is like prime. This is going into year four, and this is not a slight on Bobby, nor KJ, nor anybody that's played the last 2 years. You have just not had anybody. Maybe Quandre Diggs, frankly, when he played last year, he was one that added some juice that you plugged into the wall and just kind of started to electrify some people around him, but not like this. I mean, this guy, like your generator, when your power goes out, right, you hope it can light up your house. Like Jamal Adams lit up your neighborhood. I mean, like, you know, our old neighbor, like, just, you, power went out. You could hear it, right? It's like a lawnmower. You pull it, and it's like lighting up his house. It's like everybody brought their extension cord and plugged into it and plugged into it and plugged into it and plugged into it. And you just lit up the whole neighborhood like the 4th of July.
Yeah, he was everywhere. He was everywhere on the field. He hit people hard when he had an opportunity to do so. He's active. He yells. He screams. He's got an edge. He's pumping people up. He seems like an incredible teammate. He's honestly everything they've been missing. Everything that this defense has been missing in terms of its edge. And by the way, I'll agree with you. It's the way he makes other people better. The number one guy that, and maybe I'm wrong, but just the way he seemed to set off Blair.
Yes,
dude, Blair was a rocket. I know he had the forced fumble on the fake punt, but he was good. Other than that, I mean, he had a couple of like he had one hit near the end of the game. It was like bone crushing.
Yeah, I mean, sent that to you last night.
He was second on the team in tackles too for that game. Marquise Blair was.
Yeah, so he seemed to free up Bobby to be himself. I mean, that was not the same Bobby Wagner we watched last year. Now, maybe you're going to tell me later, Brock, there were some scheme differences, et cetera. But that's not the same Bobby Wagner that I watched last year. This guy was everywhere.
Fantastic.
That's the Bobby that I missed. And it's not because the D-line was occupying everybody. Those problems are real. The Falcons threw for 400 yards.
We're talking like, Russell and Jamal.
Those problems are real. But
now the Falcons always throw for 400 yards. Matt Schaub threw for 400 yards.
I think if they had wanted to, the Falcons could have run for 400 yards, too.
Yeah. Well, that, too. Yeah.
I mean, like,
Puna was a little tired.
Puna, after, like, two
first
plays.
First series, he was hands on the hips. Whoa. Oh, boy. The big Monet in there. We only got three of these guys.
Hey, howdy. I sent you that Jamal sound of him screaming. Were you able to slow it down and track what he was saying?
No, not quite. Not quite yet.
No, okay. No, we didn't have that. No,
all right.
But I mean, if you're talking about difference makers, he is going
well,
to.
Well, that's what you said. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Clowney made plays at the line of scrimmage. Adams was at the line of scrimmage, the second level, the secondary, the deep secondary. I mean, he's everywhere.
Yeah, pretty darn impressive. All right, we'll have some Blue 42, which will address this, and some full takeaways as well. I got to tell you, Brock, about for what I did Friday night. So it was smoky, unfortunately, so I didn't get the full effect of the view from Ascend. Now, you've been there. You and I sat there and had lunch together.
Mm-hmm.
Heather and I went for a little anniversary dinner on Friday night.
Happy
to Ascend. Thank you. Number 12. Huge anniversary.
For the 12s. You did it for the 12s.
12 for the 12s. Went to Ascend in Bellevue. And rather than order, we just said, we'll take whatever you bring us.
Oh, is it that kind of restaurant?
No.
Is the wait staff prepared for that,
You got that kind of chops.
I got that kind of juice. There's so many things on that menu.
The last time that happened in my life, Dan Marino. After a playoff win, they beat the Bills. Damon flew me down there. We walked into an Italian restaurant. Dan's like, yeah, whatever you want to do, chef.
You should do it more often. It's great.
You're the Marino. You're the Marino of Seattle.
I told you, I
did that in Vegas.
Do this in Vegas. So if you ever get a chance to go to Momofuku, in Vegas, there's a bunch of those around. It's just like Buca di Beppo.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go and they ask you how much you want to pay.
Oh.
Like how much you want to pay for dinner? Well, then you'd only get a very small amount of food.
You get some bread and some water.
It's the name your price.
Yeah,
oh, all right.
But it's like 50 to 250 or whatever.
So you walked in, you said, "I'm here for the 12s. It's my 12th anniversary. What you got, chef?"
Dude, we had some food. We had three different types of toro as part of the sushi that started off the meal. It was like a toro flight. Then there were two different types of beef. So one was a crossbreed between a Japanese bull bred with a cow from Idaho.
Snake River Farms?
Yes.
Yeah, now we're talking.
It was half Snake River Farms and half something from Wagyu or something.
Yeah.
Dude, that was ridiculously good. And then the other was some sort of an olive-fed beef from Japan.
Olive-fed?
Yeah. They found these crazy cows, and then they gave them this, like...
It's like a martini steak.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
It was sort of like steak crossed with bacon. It was
howdy.
Ridiculous.
Okay.
Everything
howdy.
Right.
Yeah,
you would
have
liked
okay.
this.
Plus the extra crispy deep-fried pepperoni. That.
It was insane. Desserts were ridiculous. Everything. Just unbelievable meal at Ascend. So thank you to everybody there. It was delicious. Now, Ascend, as you know, Brock, also connected to Famous Dave's. Do you know what they're doing this month? Tell me if this sounds good to you, Howdy.
Okay, ready.
Fried Chicken Feast.
Yes.
They're calling it Winner Winner Fried Chicken Dinner. Two fried birds, corn, coleslaw, beans, fries, cornbread.
Awesome.
6 to 8 people, just under $45.
Howdy
awesome.
Eats
the
that
end of
in
September.
Bed. I watched him eat in bed. He's going to lay a towel down in front of him and watch a game.
You get a hotel room and you fold out the couch bed and then you eat it on the couch.
Yes.
Absolutely.
They thought about calling this the Winner Winner Fried Chicken Dinner in bed.
Yes.
But ultimately, Famous Dave's, they dropped the in bed part. That's just for
Howdy. Bring me the drumstick, Melissa.
Go to togo.famousdaves.com. They're also available for pickup and delivery in Northgate, where they opened a ghost kitchen.
Hello.
Ghost kitchen in Northgate. Woo. Getting ready for Halloween. So Ascend, Famous Dave's, the whole deal. All right, Brock, something different today. Going old school. Now, we can't use Blue 42 anymore because it's been copywritten, and now it belongs to Danny and Gallant.
Sold the rights.
Intellectual
property. Apparently, there's like a whole intellectual property war going on at the station right now, so I don't want to mess with anybody's
bid. Don't start doing
bold
takes now.
No, we're not even going to use the word, the B word.
Oh,
like, we're not even going to say that. I don't want to get on Wassel's bad side, Stacy's bad side. I certainly don't want to offend Danny or Paul. So we'll go old school. And call it Blue 88. Do you remember when it was Blue 88 back in the day?
I do.
I mean, that's like Brock'em Sock'em era.
And do you remember what 88 is in the West Coast system?
Just a random number you call.
No,
it doesn't
no,
matter.
Come on.
It's just a random mean? Number at the beginning.
No,
it doesn't
no,
mean
on.
Anything.
You got it. Sprint right option. Sprint right option.
What?
It's sprint right option.
Why would you tell the other team you're running sprint right option?
They don't know what it is.
Well, every
That's
team has West Coast
time.
System.
Oh, no.
Stop it.
88?
88 doesn't
you could
mean
mix
that.
It up.
No,
you mix it up.
Well, then
you
it doesn't mean
call,
that.
And then you'd really screw them up. But go ahead.
All right.
Continue.
Anyway, let me ask you three good football questions.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
Why so much dime? What last year was all base. Now what, they have to get Delano Hill on the field? Like, why so much dime?
Well, it was big dime. It wasn't little dime.
It was dime with Leno Hill and Marquise Blair.
Are you sure it's dime when it's dime? Four safeties? I mean, you don't have like a cornerback. You know, are you sure it's got? I think
we
it's
need
big,
a new. It's not big nickel. So
it's
what
a new
is
currency.
That?
It's a new currency.
Really?
Yes, this
it's
is
like
where
a,
the
it's
text
like a
loony. Be so
peso
helpful.
Or tuna.
It's like a cow that's fed olives. I mean, it's just.
Olive husks, but yes. Go on. Go on. Why so much weird safety dime?
Yeah, because I could picture Maverick on his motorcycle right there by the airport in Top Gun. What a bummer, by the way. The pandemic crushing Top Gun 2. It was supposed to be out in June. I know it's coming, but what a bummer. And, you know, Maverick's put sunglasses on. He just has that need for speed. That I think, is clearly why you saw so much Marquise Blair. You saw a little bit of Jordan Brooks kind of get his feet wet, and I think you'll continue to see some of that and get him sprinkled in there. Can you imagine that group with Leno and Bobby and Marquise and Jordan? And that is a fast cover, 53 yards across the horizontal width of the field, plus be able to run and hit and finish. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to
is that
to
the Iowa State thing?
No, they're a little bit more of a true, like, 3-down-8. They're like a 3-3-5 with a robber. Theirs is a little bit funkier, but at least is a step in that direction. And of any positive, right, of like the most glaring positive, if you were sitting with me, right, watching it, and I had my little remote control, I'd be like, hold on, wait, what is that?
He's sitting there watching.
Whoa, yeah. What is that? Are those four safeties? What are we in right here? We're not in base anymore, and we're not even in nickel. We are in big dime. And I honestly think your very simple question, why?
Thank God we're not still talking to Pete every week. If I asked him about big dime, that would be it. That'd be the end. Pete, you running big dime?
Gosh, it's scary. You see Leno Hill out there. He's like, well, Jamal Adams is hurt.
I know.
What do we do? Why is Leno Hill out there?
Yeah. Brock, question for you. What's going on with you today? You're like movie, like, is Colin Cowherd, now that you're at Fox, is that like rubbing off on you with the metaphors? And now we got Ferris Bueller, Top
sure,
Gun. There
sure.
was another one earlier. Yeah. Very impressed. All right, question number two. Pete said that the screen pass they ran to Chris Carson for a touchdown was the best screen pass of his entire time here. He's right. Because I can't come up with another even positive one they've run during that entire time.
Yeah.
So why was, and that wasn't the only good screen they ran on Sunday. So what was it? Why did this screen game all of a sudden become legit?
We've been screaming for that for about 8 years, right? We've wondered why in the heck they can't do it when everybody else can. And that's part of what we talked about earlier, them being 17 for 18 on throws of less than 5 yards. You can incorporate and put all of those screen passes into that mix. So I do think part of it is Damian Lewis is athletic. Ethan Posick is athletic. Dwayne Brown is athletic. Upondi maybe not so much, and Shell is an enormous door of a human being, but you've got three dudes that can move up front. I mean, really move. Damian and Ethan and Dwayne, as far as NFL linemen, and like you want to run a screen game, those are all plus guys. DJ Fluker, not so much. Jermaine Ifedi, and not really. Little Joey Hunt, kind of, when he wasn't just mowed over. So you actually have competent, capable, athletic, three of them linemen. And, you know, Upondi is savvy enough and knows what he is and what he isn't at this stage of his career. I do think that plays a role, and it was absolutely a focus, much like we talked earlier about, you know, this team and going for it on 4th and 5 was a change of course, much like we just got done talking about dime was a change of course. And I think when you study and you evaluate the Kansas City Chiefs and some of these offenses and the New Orleans Saints and how many easy completions. Can I just get some easy... I remember Peyton way back when. Man, can I just find some plays where I can just take my mind and turn it off and just have an easy completion? And, you know, as much as Russell has always had to do a lot of it athletically, over the course of 9 years. You give that guy easy completions, you see 31 for 35. And yeah, I think a testament to their work, to their study, to the extra time, and realizing, and these screens, as they are for the Chiefs, can be so highly effective.
It's going to ruin some of our theories, like that's where Russell's height was actually a problem with
right.
oncoming defensive linemen and some other stuff. All right, question number three. So this defense was obviously different. We saw them, you know, running big dime. What's next? Like, what does this look like in a few weeks? How does it evolve from here?
Yeah, I think the area they can improve the most, and we talked earlier about the defensive line. We'll get to it in takeaways. I don't know how much improvement there can truly be. I mean, I think there has to be some baby steps, but I think an area with this new lineup and with Leno, and I'll throw Jordan Brooks as he's going to play a little bit more, and certainly Marquise Blair, the biggest area of improvement has got to be their zone coverage and recognition. And I think it will be. And you saw the number of times where Marquise Blair kind of clapped his hands after a play, right? And he's like, oh, I knew that was coming, but I just haven't seen it enough. I haven't run it enough. I haven't repped it enough to get underneath that in cut or get underneath that curl or take away that concept that was encouraging to me. That like it wasn't just totally lost in space as their base defense was a year ago, with missiles being, you know, flown right over their ears left and right for completion after completion after completion. The windows were a little tighter. The contact rate and the violence was way up. But if there's an area I think that they can honestly, tangibly improve over the course of the season, it's going to be their awareness in zone coverage. That's Bobby trusting Jamal behind him. That's Marquise trusting people around him, trusting his eyes and his reps. So I would watch for that over the course of the season. How much can they tighten up that zone coverage? How much more can they pattern read and recognize? Because there's a lot of areas for growth there, and Sunday showed that.
Well, that is an old school Blue 88. Three good football questions for Brock Heward. We'll get back to football in a minute. I want to do takeaways. We got a whole slate of them from the game, and kind of they lead to some other conversation and stuff. But I got to take a moment or two here, Brock. This can't be ignored. We can't just let this go. Mm. Mariners got trounced, right? You saw what happened. A couple of good teams. The next thing you know, all their winning ways, you know, just got like left in the dust when they were all of a sudden facing some better teams like the Giants.
San Francisco, yep. Mm-hmm.
But they come back. They win 2 out of 3 in Arizona. They end up winning 3 games in a row thanks to an unbelievable comeback in the first game of the doubleheader. How awesome was that? And then you saw this.
Dan, the 0-1 pitch to Laureano from Yakavonis. On the way, swinging a high fly ball deep left center field. On the run to the warning track. Kyle Lewis near the wall. Leaps up and he makes the catch! Holy smokes, Kyle Lewis! Over the wall and left center brings it back. And he takes a grand salami away from Ramon Laureano. Holy smokes, Lewis, timing that leap high over the wall in left center field out near the pen. And that will retire the side. What a play by Kyle Lewis.
Now, it kind of fell apart after that. The pitching really wasn't up for the rest of the challenge right. against the A's on that particular game. I mean, they say that momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. For the Mariners, it might be whoever you're throwing in later tonight. But for at least that moment, man, you got a little glimpse of where this is going.
Whoa. And that was a question about him, right? I mean, that was one of your legit questions.
Yeah. Well, we saw last year in the corners, he did not look like
Correct.
A corner outfielder.
Correct. And is he a plus center fielder in Major League Baseball? That is a plus-plus play. That was J.P.
General?
Crawford's
no.
web jam from the season before. That
yes.
was special. That was uniquely, athletically, oh my gosh, that is. Because that's not just a little bit over the wall. If you saw the still shot of how elevated he was in full speed to change. I mean, if there's any question about his knee and his health and everything else, that answered it. It is done. But man, if he can just be an above average center fielder with what he does at the plate, what a win.
Yeah.
What an absolute
win.
Well,
I think he could be, at the very least, an average one who will make the occasional spectacular play, and that's exactly what that was. That's a special play.
And you love the smile as much as the play
it's
was.
It's not even the smile. He always has a great smile. I love the energy he plays with, but it wasn't the smile there. It was the full-on, like, gallop.
Whoa,
it was the Jamal Adams who just knocked you down scream,
yep.
followed by yes. the full-on horse galloping from center field. Dude, people feed off that. That's the kind of energy that'll... Now, it didn't lead to anything in the game. It's not going to... When you say that in baseball, it doesn't mean that the next guy then goes out and hits a home run because he's so pumped up from what Kyle Lewis did. It's about how that translates over the course of a season. Wanting to come and be around him, wanting to be at the park early, wanting to take extra batting practice, wanting to take extra fielding, wanting to be with your team. All of those things, I think, matter over the course of time as you set a culture of what you want to be about in Seattle. And I think what you're seeing right now is J.P. Crawford, Kyle Lewis, Evan White, the rest of this young group of players, they're setting a culture of what they want this place to be. And there's credit to go all around. I mean, Kyle Seager and D. Gordon and Marco Gonzalez. I mean, like, those veterans setting a tone and the next generation kind of playing the way they're playing and with the style, et cetera. Brock, that's how you become a destination of a place where people want to be. That's awesome.
The great Grazfather, your godfather, to your beautiful children. You know, he said it very clear, through social media channels and otherwise this year. Like, this has been the greatest evaluation is they have young people that you are as excited about as you were in the late 90s. I remember what it was like when you watched Ken Griffey, and I'm not saying Kyle Lewis is Ken Griffey and you know, that Kelnick is going to be A-Rod or anything else. I just remember the excitement of young, difference-making stars. And you're like, wow, this dude is just different. And this guy loves ball, and he loves to play, to your point. And, man, they got a chance to be pretty good, really good. And I think you walk away from this season, regardless of what happens over the last, dozen games or so in this playoff push, and you feel better about your young people 100%. Than we ever have doing this show.
There are a good 6, 7, 8 games ahead of where anybody thought they would be right now, and it's not because they brought in some overpriced veterans and said, let's give these guys a shot. And no, it's all the young guys. They traded away any veteran who was doing it. This is without Taijuan Walker. This is without Nola. I mean, like, they traded. This is without their closer. I mean, like, arguably they got better when they let that kid go. All right, whatever. Like, they're doing this with the young guys. It's been Sheffield and Dunn and, you know, obviously Lewis. Yeah.
And even
White.
Evan White's glove. He may not be hitting, but he's playing unbelievable defense. And, oh, by the way,
he's been hitting for the last couple weeks, though. I mean, I know
this is not Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick. Nope. You also didn't sacrifice those guys this year, too.
No, it's really pretty been cool. a fun little ride. So I know it's a football day and it's mostly going to be a football podcast, but you got to give a little recognition. For them to win 3 straight after getting owned in San Francisco, I thought that was pretty good.
Takeaways.
Brock, it's back. Takeaways. I know you missed it. I know you missed the music.
This feels so good. It
feels like 8 o'clock on a Monday morning.
I don't care what evaluators say out there, analysts, that don't like, you know, little video game music in the background.
You
segments.
Like
I don't
it.
Care.
Yeah, you're a fan. All right, let's dig into some takeaways. Brock, where do you want to start?
I have got to start with, I can't believe we've been talking like an hour, and while we praise Jamal Adams and everything he is the Energizer Bunny, hey, Salk, this defense was violent. They were violent. They had 4 hammers putting nails right through the shoulder pads of multiple Falcons. Julio Jones got up looking around like, oh, man, this ain't fun. Adam Amin nearly choked on a bunch of words late in the game. He's like, oh gosh, Marquise Blair, oh, Bobby, oh, Jamal, like, those are violent dudes. You know, I said to Danny and Paul on Monday, I don't think it was hyperbole either. The number of slobber knocking, knock you off your feet, knock some wind out of your lungs hits in that game in Atlanta on Sunday, I think there were as many of those as there were the entire season in 2019. Maybe 2018 and 2019 combined, frankly. I mean, the number of guys that just for the first time, when was the last time you honestly saw receivers or running backs or tight ends kind of get up and look around after they got absolutely blasted? It had been a long, long time, and the level of violence was way up.
It's been a while, man. Yes. It really has. I agree with you. Seeing them hit like that must have had a cumulative effect over the course of the game, right?
Yes. And Quandre Diggs, to be fair, you know, as much as Clowney won the Niner game in Santa Clara last year, if you remember early in the game, they ran like a little in cut, a little slant or skinny, and Quandre Diggs like sawed that receiver in half. And you're in, that was like eye opening. Like, oh my gosh, that's what Earl used to do. That's what Cam used to do. And to see what Jamal has done is that just igniter. Mm. And we knew Marquise Blair had it in him, and he unloads twice in the game. Quandre Diggs teeing off. Bobby Wagner at the end of that game punishing fools, and Jamal did it throughout. So to see that level of violence, just that violence meter ramp up to something more familiar to, yeah, 13, 14, 15 was unbelievably.
Let me spin that forward a little bit, and this is one of mine, was to more talk about Marquise Blair, because Adam's getting all the hype, as he should. I mean, he deserves all the hype and more. But I really am pumped about Marquise Blair. The nastiness, the physicality. You see Ryan Clark tweeting about him during the game, ex-safety himself, saying he separates players from footballs.
Yes.
That's been missing, right? And he saw one forced fumble. My guess is that won't be his last. What did you see from Blair specifically that will kind of continue into the rest of this season?
Yes, I honestly, this is one of those, man, when Pete got on that plane for the long flight home, I bet you he was so anxious to just watch some of that defensive tape. Not for the running and hitting. He felt every bit of that on the sidelines. But for the amount of teaching they're going to be able to do from that game. Marquise Blair had not played one snap of nickel in his life. He had been a safety from high school to college at Utah Junior College. And so to be in a totally new position, and he didn't play it perfectly. In fact, there was a lot of just missed angles and missed steps and just, oh, that was it. Ah, I could have got to that one, right? And that, to me, was the most encouraging, because he's going to get a lot better in coverage. He's got the quickness. He's got the want-to. He's got a guy in 33 behind him that's going to demand it from him. But yes, like Ryan Clark tweeted, like, just to separate people from the ball, pretty unique trait, especially if you can get that out of your nickel back.
Takeaways.
All right, almost all of these are going to be positive. But I do think we've got to talk for a moment or two about the defensive line. Those problems didn't go away. Atlanta ran on them early. Probably should have kept running on them. I don't know why they stopped. They threw for more than 400 yards, mm-hmm. mostly because Ryan was just comfortable in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Falcons might not be good, but I watched the Niners, Rams, and Cardinals over the course of the day on Sunday.
Yeah.
All three of them are good.
Yeah, they're all good.
Those are three good teams. And they're going to exploit the problems on this defensive line. So what did you see, man? Because I came away from it going, we still got a problem here.
Jaren was more active, I would say, than a lot of what we saw a year ago. I thought he was more active. Puna was out of shape. There's no question about it. When you're hands on hips after two plays, that's not a good thing. And in football, conditioning for those big walruses is not easy to get into, especially when you don't go live much and you don't get, you know, full contact and everything else. That tug of war does take something out of you. So, yeah, I mean, that is a group that you're going to have to still look to at the trade deadline or a practice squad. Right, because now, you know, teams can protect a couple guys on the practice squad, but there's a lot of dudes around the leagues on practice squads getting work in, getting reps in. So you're going to continue to eye that, and that still has to be an area that you have to address, Mike.
Did you see anything from Collier?
A little bit. Didn't he have a tackle?
Well, he had a nice play when he went unblocked.
Yeah.
I mean,
he had the one play.
Right, and that's fine. Benson Mayoa had a play where he chased the guy down, which obviously Ziggy Ansah couldn't do last year.
On a fourth down, that was a big deal.
Big play, absolutely. I mean, Mayoa is
Benson
an
probably
over...
showed me the most. I thought Bruce played the base defense early down and set some edges. Bruce did what he did. I would say, and I said to you, Benson, I think, was the guy that I picked, either Benson or the field or somebody not on the roster.
Not
on the roster. If it was a 1A, it was Benson. And yeah, I thought he showed a little bit more quickness.
Wow. Yeah, that's nice revisionist history there.
What?
Well, if it was a 1A, obviously I would have had another pick.
Well, I was given Benson or the field. I chose the field. But my second choice would have been Benson.
I think that's true. I think, right. Kyle, I think you're right. Yep, I think you're right. I think you nailed that, Kyle. Way to go.
Okay.
So he was, I would say I was a little encouraged with him. But yes, as far as in this league, I mean, that is a bottom five on paper defensive line in the league. And was it offset by its linebackers, its big dime, its nickel? Yes. But are there going to be many gaps still to have to be filled in there? Certainly.
Takeaways.
All right. So I talked to Mark Schlereth, called the game with Adam and me. He said this to me, and when he said it, I got goosebumps. So I don't know if I can give you guys the same level of goosebumps, but I'll try. So Schlereth on the Zoom meeting with the players. That's how we're having to do. There's no longer in-person production meetings all season in the NFL. But most of these guys have gotten super accustomed to it. And even on our Zoom meetings with technology and everything else, and it was actually pretty seamless. It was enjoyable. So Mark Schlereth says to Jamal, okay, you know, you're an energizer guy, right? You feed off the crowd. You like the energy. You like the fans. Like, you're going to play in a stadium with no fans, with no juice. I mean, how are you going to function? And Jamal Adams just looked right at Schlereth in the Zoom camera and said, well, we're fixing to see who loves football, aren't we?
That was good.
And Schlereth said, okay, I'm good. I don't need anything else. Like that, but that's fine for me.
He sure played like he loved football.
And how, honestly, how many times have we talked about that over the years, man? Ziggy Ansah a year ago, right? That was the biggest concern of me. This guy just loved ball. Tedrick Thompson out loafing on the practice field. Like, just, where's the juice, man? Where is the energy going to come from? And, you know, Pete went as far in those production meetings and talking to Schlereth, like, yeah, I mean, to see what he has done, back to kind of our earlier conversation, to elevate everybody, every single person in that building with his love for football. Earl had that love for football, and I think still loves to play football, but he went a little off the deep end. Cam Chancellor loved football, but was not nearly as vocal and as emotional, as demonstrative as Jamal is. Richard loves football. But Richard loves it because he's never at fault. He's never wrong, right? He loves, I think, the pride that comes with that. This dude loves ball and could play anywhere. Could play on the blacktop outside the building right there, right? At the parking lot, and let's just go. And, man, it's just that there's a Lawyer Malloy to me. Of any single teammate, Olin Krutz and Lawyer Malloy were the two that I ever played with that you'd say, yep. It just didn't matter. I mean, that guy paid a lot of money because he was really good.
He actually reminded me a little bit of Lawyer. I mean, yep. The Cam Chancellor comp is going to be the obvious one because he's the last great, say, you know, big hitting safety we've seen here as a leader, etc. But watching him, I wondered if there was going to be a little bit more Lawyer Malloy to him.
Yes. Just some absolute juice. So I guess we're fixing to see who loves football, aren't we?
I guess we are.
Takeaways.
All right. The drop-off between Chris Carson down to Carlos Hyde was pretty small. It was there. Carson looked great. Hyde looked good, though. The drop-off to Travis Homer was a steep cliff.
Don't worry about it. Your guy's going to be back in 5 weeks.
Why in the world was he playing?
What was
on third down?
Well, look, I do want to criticize it. You know, it's almost hard not to. But I think I understand. They didn't have a preseason. Chris Carson's coming off every season being injured. Especially last year. Mm-hmm. Carlos Hyde is an older guy who had a lot of carries the last few years.
Not as familiar in the system, right? A guy that played last year and started a playoff game.
I understand that they want to limit some of their reps in the game and try to keep everybody fresh. This in some ways is how much does a running back play in the preseason? Like one carry, one series, maybe. So I don't necessarily have a problem with them mixing it up. I was a little surprised to see Homer in there for some crucial plays late in the game. That surprised me.
That's kind of the Seahawks way to throw a guy into
it. Doesn't matter what the scenario is.
We need to catch the 1 yard line to save our season.
Sure.
Will you make it? You've never caught a ball.
We're going
to
cut you next year, but sure. Let's throw him out there.
Don't worry about it. Rashad Penny will be the number three
right.
running
Rashad's
back.
Coming
soon.
Back.
Well, that was sort of the one go to number four.
All right. The one thing I was wondering about, though, is if you do know that Penny's coming back, so they're going to be having some sort of a break later in the season, why would you need Homer?
Because he's a great special teams player, too. He is.
No, I didn't say he shouldn't be on the roster. Right. Why is he out there running the ball?
Well, he's a physical dude, and he's good in protection.
But he's physical and small.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Next.
Here's the last thing on that. Yes. I know running backs don't matter, but running backs matter. I know they don't matter, like, overall, and I understand all the numbers that show why they don't matter, and I believe them. But also, they do matter. Both things are true at the same time.
I like that.
Running backs don't matter, but they do. Because if you don't have one who's capable, you see it. Like, you can't tell me you don't see the difference when Chris Carson's out there versus when Carlos Hyde is out there versus when Travis Homer's out there.
Yep.
The same way you can't tell me you didn't see a difference from Julius Jones to Marshawn Lynch when he got here. Like, I understand that the minute differences between running backs don't mean that much. And maybe it's not as big a deal as what a havoc-wreaking defensive linemen can do. But don't tell me running backs don't matter at all. Nope. We can see with our eyes that they do.
Well played.
Takeaways.
Dude, I'm on just a positive, happy fest. Have I said one negative thing for an hour and a half today?
Sure, why not? No.
For an hour and a half? You mean like for 10 years?
We talk about an
hour and a half.
Your mouth.
Manish Tanaha Laila Hazad. Why should tonight be different from any other night?
Oh, you are so silly. I'm going to say positive because I think some of my harsher criticism this offseason was levied against Ken Norton and just their scheme and their system. I think I was pretty negative with the base defense last year, 68% of the snaps. I think I was. If you go back and listen to some of that, it was atrocious. They were not aggressive. They were passive. Mike Pettine, the esteemed D coordinator with the Packers, I loved what their messaging is for their team, and that is we thrive, not survive. And last year, and frankly for 2 years, on defense, you've just played to survive. You've not ever played to thrive and be aggressive, and you set the tone. And you had a bunch of dudes that were so much better than other people, and as a group, your defense 12 through 17 did that. They thrived, and you had to deal with us. But they survived the last 2 years, and it was nice to see them thrive. It was nice to see a double A gap show with Jamal Adams coming off the edge, getting a one-on-one and beating it in protection and getting home for a sack. It was nice to see big dime. It was nice to see nickel. It was nice to see nickel linebacker pressures. It was nice to see a corner blitz. It was nice to see just some depth to that defensive playbook and an attitude. And number 33 plays an enormous role in this, but an attitude to thrive and not simply survive. And I think many people would say offensively it's the same thing. It was nice to see number 3 thrive. It was nice to see him throw it 68% of the time on early downs. It was nice to see them get the ball out of his hands. It was nice to see screens. It was nice to see easy completions. It was nice to see them be aggressive on 4th and 5 after you cross the 50 and not just punt and pin your opponent down. It was about thriving and not just surviving. That was on full display for 60 minutes.
Takeaways.
How good, Brock, since we're being positive, as we should be, unbelievable win, how good could this guy be?
4-man rush. Russ looks. He's going to lay it up over the top. He's got a man down there. It's Metcalf. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. On 4th down and 5, Russ takes the snap, stands back there like a patient man and waits, and 14 gets open for 6. A 38-yarder. Holy smoke. You guys are covering DK Metcalf with one man? Forget about it. He beats him for 6.
How good could that guy be, bro? How good could Russell... I mean, I'm sorry. How good could DK Metcalf be? Just kidding.
Well, you saw a pretty cool picture with Julio Jones coming up to him after the game, right? And you looked at those two. And you saw DK about an inch taller. Julio has played a lot of games in this league. And I think even Julio looked at DK like, yeah, I remember when. My body felt good. I remember when I could practice like you're practicing. I bet you saw how good could he be. That's the ceiling. It's Julio Jones. That is a ceiling. Now, change of direction is still not, I think, where Julio's is. It is a great ceiling. And I bet you last night or Sunday night or Monday night, I bet you he went into that facility and went and did the drill that I watched him do on a Tuesday night late in the year last year when everybody was gone. And that's bring the jugs machine out with tennis balls. And to spend a lot of time catching a tennis ball, both, you know, to your right and to your left, and you know, with one hand and two hands. And because I'm sure he was severely disappointed with his drop. Like, that was, to him, like, yeah, the touchdown was nice. A little slant and go late in the game was awesome. Those are big plays down the field. But he didn't want to just be a go route big play guy. He wants to be a precision, cut in on that 15-yard route, ball's on me, catch it. And make somebody miss and do damage with it like Julio Jones does. So eliminating the drops, taking care of the football, that is, to me, about the only thing to check off. And the ceiling's Julio Jones.
That'd be pretty good, man. I know he had the drop, but, man, did he ever make up for it? I mean, he ends up coming up with a huge third down conversion on that same drive, and then later the touchdown. I mean, he's such a beast in
man
so
amongst
many
boys.
Different ways. Seriously. So that's takeaways, Brock, from today. I want to spend a couple of minutes before we get out of here just talking about what's to come this week, because when the Seahawks and Patriots get together, great games seem to ensue. These teams have played 3 times since Pete and Russ got here, And all three of them have been great games. Mm. Now, granted, you would probably trade your two Seahawks win for the one they lost. But just looking at it and saying, all right, they've played three times. The first was the crazy back and forth game here in Seattle with the flea flicker, right? It was like sort of like one of the first times Russell ascended.
He's not even a quarterback. Right, you got you let Scott a guy Zolak that's not even a cornerback.
Right. They're making just him lost look like to a quarterback. Guy. Yeah.
Can't even play cornerback.
And to Zoe's credit, he later recanted that when we saw him at the Super Bowl. Like,
yes, he did.
I was wrong about that one. but that was a classic game.
Let the Seahawks hang around. Right now it's 23-16 with the extra point coming up and a touchdown can beat you.
I mean, you're making Russell Wilson look like a quarterback, which he's not.
Sorry, Zoe. That one's going to haunt you forever. But that was a classic game. Richard said you mad bro to Brady. I mean, like all of that. The next one's obviously the Super Bowl. And then the last game was a couple years ago. Remember Cam and Rob Gronkowski in the end zone at the very
Sunday
end?
Sunday night, right?
Earl Thomas just destroying Rob Gronkowski, breaking his rib.
CJ ProSize having his one great game as a Seahawk.
Belichick said yesterday that's the most competitive game he's ever played at Foxborough.
Yeah. Now, he says that every week, to be fair. Like, Belichick says something like that every week. But
respect your opponents, Mike.
I think that Bill does have a healthy respect for Pete Carroll, and I've always believed
that. He said yesterday, there's no player in the league I respect more than, well, I respect every player, but Russell Wilson's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Like, well, all right.
Yeah, that's high praise from, now, again, Bill praises everybody. That is his job every single week, is to tell you how great the other team is. He does it every week. So it's not like a it's like Brock.
But even with like...
like whenever he tells you everything is great, Josh at some Rosen? Point you don't have to believe him anymore.
Watch your mouth. Whatever you said, and what was that Hebrew? What did you do earlier?
That was all Hebrew, for you. Just for you. But did you end up talking to Mike Reese this week, Brock?
I did not. He never called me.
Oh, he never did? No, I talked to Mike, and then he wanted your number, so I gave it to him. He may call you, or kind of leading up to... an article. Mike does, he has Brady Henderson's job in Boston. He's ESPN.com writer. Writes
What's his business with you?
Mike is
he just
one
wanted
of.
To get to Brock?
Yeah, probably. Mike is, first of all, one of the all time nicest people I've ever met.
Like, Rick Riz nice.
Yes, he is Rick Riz level nice. That's how nice Mike Reese is. Cool. But he's working on a piece just kind of tracing the histories of these two teams since the Super Bowl and not revisiting the Super Bowl necessarily.
Yeah, we don't need that.
No, but just kind of what's happened since then and sort of the next chapter and what the Patriots did and how they rebuilt after that. And that sort of launched their next, Super Bowl win or two. And then how the Seahawks haven't done that. They took more of a, hey, we're going to pay everybody and try to keep it going and sort of tracing their history since then. And he called me to ask about it. I just found myself talking through the last 6 years of Seahawks history. I don't know, it was interesting to kind of find myself talking about what they've done and what's changed. And you know, they made some tough gambles that didn't pay off. I mean, they gambled they'd be able to shift on the fly, and in some cases it didn't work, and then they compounded those mistakes by trying to make up for them with Sheldon Richardson and some of the other mistakes they made. And unfortunately, you know, you had some bad luck with Cam and some bad luck with Averill, and that led to some more compounding of those mistakes. So for them to be here, and oh, by the way, whereas the Patriots get to play in what has traditionally during their entire 20-year run here been the worst division in football, the Seahawks have been playing in what is arguably the best division in football for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
All of the teams are good this year. I mean, maybe the Niners will go into a shell because that happens sometimes after Super Bowl, but they're certainly talented. I mean, all four teams in this division are really good, and that the Seahawks have been able to make the playoffs even every year is its own version of impressive, even if it was done totally differently from how the Patriots did it.
Yeah, I think there is a tremendous amount. We know this in talking to Pete, both publicly and privately, the respect that he has for Bill and that Bill has for Pete for doing it as long as he has. For, you know, that longevity matters and how you build it matters. And, you know, I had the Packers last week with Aaron Rodgers talking about Mike Zimmer. And he's like, yeah, there's very few people I respect more in football. He gets his guys to understand the game. And Aaron said it's basically Zimmer, Belichick, Pete Carroll, and yeah, that's about it. as far as, you know, play legitimate defense and teach the why and get you guys to do it. So there's just like not freebies and gimmies and it's not easy for you. Like every play, you just know that defense is just well versed, knows it inside and out, knows the gray, knows the nuances. And I think that's why there's a tremendous amount of respect for one another. And as Pete digs into this Cam Newton film, like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
You know, here we go. You know, here's their innovation and here's how they're
putting
creating
Cam with Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick is a dangerous proposition.
What, 8 dudes opt out, and yet, well, didn't slow them down week number one. No, still going to be hard out. Going to be an awesome game.
These two coaches are, you know, in many ways like the two polar opposites of their generation of coaching, and certainly their style and the way they communicate, and certainly the way they talk with the media, the way they treat their players. I mean, they are opposites in so many ways, and yet, you know, maybe you could throw Harbaugh or a couple other guys, John Harbaugh, in there, but they've been the most successful coaches of their era,
yep.
Right? I mean, I don't know if I could say by far. Obviously, Belichick's in kind of a class of his own. But who's the second most effective coach of the Belichick era? Is it Pete?
Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid. There's people
some
at the
guys.
Table.
Yeah, there's some other guys sitting there.
There's people at the table, but it's a small table.
And none of them show the just utter polarizing ways you can coach teams quite like Pete and Bill. So I always love when they play against each other just for this, you know, complete model, I guess I would say, of how football can be done. Not even just played, but how you can even view the game of football. They view it so differently, and yet both have had such success doing it their way because they're 100% committed to it.
No question.
Yeah. So this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Sunday Night Football, Al, Chris, the whole deal, Patriots, Seahawks, Pete, Bill, Russell, Brady. Oh, no, Brady. Sorry, my bad. That's going to be Cam Newton. Still pretty fun. All right, that's a fun podcast, buddy. That was a lot of fun today.
Yeah, it's kind of nice when there's actual football games to talk about.
We will certainly have another interesting one to talk about next week. Enjoy the smoke-filled week. Hopefully this thing clears out of here. We'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, the head.
Bye-bye.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!